All right, welcome once again to another WaitingForNextYear.com podcast. This is Craig Lindell, and I have another new guest. Who's on the line, Mr. Guest?
This is Jacob Rosen, a weekend writer here for Waiting for Next Year.
And actually a long-time writer now at this point.
Long-time writer. I think I'm fifth on the article standings right now.
The article standings, which, you know, is it really that important to have the most?
I've been around pretty long. I've been around since freshman year of college.
Oh, nice.
4 years.
All right. So today we're going to be talking about, of course, the Browns' loss to the Indianapolis Colts, where everybody had some Browns fans actually had some expectations of a possible victory, only to be beaten over the head with reality yet again. That you know, I don't know if it's a lack of belief in the team. It seems to be, I don't know, am I just immature for automatically finally getting to the point where I'm just blaming the coach?
It's 85%. When 85% of Browns fans are predicting any win, let alone against a team that is at a point as us or slightly better on the road, that doesn't make sense in my mind. At the best, it'd be a toss-up kind of game.
Right. So you're talking about the Browns reader survey, where 85% of Browns fans that we surveyed predicted a victory, although I will say the margin of victory was only 6 points.
That's still pretty substantial when you're talking Vegas. 85% is quite a bit. And that sounds reasonable. The Browns fans I've talked to over the past week and a half leading up to this game, it seemed like everyone was saying, this is a shoe-in, we're going to win the next few games, and we'll be right back on track. This team still is just not very good. And yeah, you can blame the coach, you can keep saying it's Shurmur's fault. But in the end, that was a game against an equal-caliber team where they were just as good and we were on the road.
So it makes me wonder if maybe I should change the question next week. Instead of saying, you know, who do you think is going to win and what's the score going to be, I should just say, hey, you have to bet $1,000 of your own dollars. Because then instead of putting on the rose-colored glasses, I think there'd be that financial implication in their mind.
It's possible, certainly, but I wouldn't put $1,000 on the Browns for any game of the season.
Well, no, of course not. Of course. But, no, so, and that's another thing. This team, it's like, I don't even know so much that I think people expected them to win. It's just so much that, you know, finally they're showed that they should have expectations put upon them. We know what they can do.
Yeah.
And then is that really make you so stupid as a fan to expect them to do as well as they can every week?
Not necessarily. I think that's just fine. And we've been competitive. When you look at the fact we're 1-6, but we've lost all close games, and the least we can do as a team right now, as a franchise, is to remain competitive. And you can't say we've really been blown out of a full game this season. Yeah, we had a big lead against the Giants, and that turned ugly in the end, but we haven't been blown out for all 60 minutes of a game, and I think that shows we're making the right strides, despite having clearly and officially the worst record in the NFL right now, which is a sad and catastrophic thing when you look at it. Oh my gosh, we're supposed to be making improvements and we're the worst team in the league. But a couple teams have had their buys. We've lost a lot of close games. And being the AFC North, we're going to have a tough schedule.
Well, and a lot of people made the argument last year that despite the wins, that the Browns were the worst team in the league last year. You know, when they played Seattle, they had Charlie, you know, the QB was so bad I can't even remember his name. And Marshawn Lynch was hurt.
Jackson.
Tarvarius Jackson, right. And Marshawn Lynch was hurt for that game. Again, Curtis Painter started for the Colts when the Browns barely beat them last year. The Browns were unable to defeat the St. Louis Rams when they had them on the ropes at the end. So, you know, this year with a tougher schedule, it's not unreasonable to think that the team is actually better with a worse record. But, you know, I always feel very immature when I come down blaming the coach, but I'm having a lot of trouble not blaming the coach nowadays.
And I think that's okay. In the end, there's going to be a lot of plays. There's going to be a lot of timeouts. There's going to be a lot of, when you look at the run-pass discrepancy, yeah, it's okay to blame the coach. And I think at this point in time, it's probably going to happen. Looking to Haslam, looking to clean the house. One way I like to kind of categorize this is it going to be, what's the worst situation for Haslam to be in this point next year? If he brings in a new coach, everyone's going to give him the benefit of the doubt. If we start off slow, or if things kind of start to progress a little slower than kind of high hopes were, but if he keeps Shurmur and we continue to struggle, that's the worst PR nightmare possible for the new owner, for Haslam. So I think Shurmur's as good as gone, and I think it's fair to say at this point we've given him a shot. We can't have another bad season like this.
Yeah, coming into the year, I said that he was I would give him till the bye week to see if he had made the adjustments to being, you know, a better in-game manager, and I thought he had a chance to do that with the hiring of Brad Childress, so that some of the, you know, week in and week out game planning duties might come off his plate. But in the end, here we are. He's got the same boneheaded 4th-and-1 call. I mean, that sequence with 3rd-and-1 where they throw long and then they take a timeout because they run out of time and then they punt it. If you're going to punt it, take the 5-yard penalty. You cannot call that timeout and have all that game planning time only to come out and punt it. Worst case scenario is a pick six and they go back 60 yards for a touchdown. But other than that, worst case scenario is, you know, they don't complete the 4th-and-1. And then they still have to put the defense out there, and the defense has, you know, 60 or 70 yards to work with to try and keep them out of field goal range. So how much worse is that than, I mean, I don't know. I guess you always expect your punter to be able to nail them in a little bit deeper than Hodges did, but still, the reward of punting just doesn't seem high enough to justify it. Am I crazy? Am I just beating on Shurmur too much, or what do you think, Jacob?
That's a 4th-and-1 play that came after a 2nd-and-1 and a 3rd-and-1, both which were long pass plays. So you got to point to both the play calling on those two previous plays. And then the 4th-and-1, I remember talking to my dad and to friends right during that game, right as it's happening, saying, the punt, I can't really disagree with it. If you pin him down deep, I can't really disagree with it that much. But it depended upon three things in my mind. A good punt that wasn't a touchback, as you were just saying that Hodges ended up doing. For the defense to keep playing the way it was, holding him to 43 yards and 3 possessions prior. And for the Browns to take advantage the next time they had the football. And none of those three things obviously happened. So I can't blame the play call on 4th. You had the timeout, then you punted it. The 2nd and 3rd down calls are a little more concerning to me. You have a running back. You can use them occasionally, not just 16 times an entire game to run the football. And I think that shows the management. It's not just the 4th-and-1 call, which I think he played the numbers for when he had a second to think about it. And if you punt him down deep, that's okay. But it's getting ready for those crunch time plays. And 2nd and 3rd just weren't the right plays to get us in the good situation to win the game.
See, and that's what I like about you, Jacob, the subtle stats. You know, you went in there, you knew for a fact that the Browns ran the ball 17 times, and in your head, you automatically subtracted Whedon's scramble to account for the fact that only 16 runs were by running backs, which are designed runs in the game.
Yes, and when I thought about it a little more then, the play calling this season obviously has been a big topic for everybody, but it reminds me of Oklahoma State. It reminds me of the offense that the Cowboys were running last year as they were putting up 50 points a game in the Big 12. Josh Gordon and Greg Little being kind of like Justin Blackman, getting the long targets, getting the medium-range targets. And their running game is just such a small fragment of the entire offensive game plan. When you look at Oklahoma State, they blew out almost everyone they played. The three games they played that were close, the figure of pass plays over all plays was 75% pass. And that's kind of where the Browns have been at this season.
Yeah, and to my defense, I've also defended Shurmur when I thought people were being crazy. You know, when he calls a pass play with Chris Obanaya on the field, you know, I don't think it's the end of the world. When he ran a pitch out to Armon Smith and Armon Smith just had to beat one single player on the field, I thought it was defensible. I mean, that's a play where you expect your running back who knows where he's going to be able to defeat one safety on the way to the 1-yard first down.
I don't think I've ever heard anybody talk more about Armon Smith than you.
Yeah, I'm struggling with the fact that he never made the roster. He was my pick for surprise player, and he was given a chance, and he had that huge run in preseason. Anyway, again, I've wasted too many words on Armon Smith. So where do we go from here? I can't let this go. So not only does Pat Shurmur make what I call some pretty bad mistakes, he refuses to own up to anything. You know, he's got his receiver owning up to the fact that he didn't make the catch. He's got all these different people stepping up and saying, hey, we weren't good enough. And he's saying, well, you know, that calls a non-issue. We got the ball back.
I think in a way, that's coach speak too, but this is a guy knowing he's got to be confident in his job if he wants to keep it. Haslam's that kind of guy. He has to be that kind of guy too. Is it right? No. I think every fan can see past the fact that he hasn't managed timeouts well. He hasn't managed clock well. He hasn't managed play calling well in those two seasons. He brought along Childress, and not only is Childress kind of out of touch in my mind, but he hasn't made a substantial difference. We've had only two games where Richardson's had more than 50 yards rushing. Yeah, he's been hurt. Hardesty's only had one other game where he had more than 50 yards rushing. This team is pass heavy. We're predictable, and we haven't made any noticeable changes in terms of what we do as an offense since from last year to this year. And that was supposed to be the big difference. And you haven't seen it. You haven't seen the changes. I think it's fair to say that Shurmur's not doing a great job. And it's also kind of predictable to say that he's not going to own up to it.
So you think the increased production from the offense against a harder schedule is just purely based on talent? Is that all because of Whedon and the offensive line?
Oh, in terms of us putting up more points and yards this year, you mean?
Yeah.
I think so. I think we've played some worse than expected defenses so far as well. When you factor in the fact we've played Cincinnati twice, Buffalo, and Indianapolis, we've put up some decent passing yards, obviously. That's a lot to the defensive line, a lot to Whedon, a lot to throwing it 40 times a game. But I think in the end, it hasn't mattered. We haven't scored when we needed to. We haven't been consistent enough. We haven't gotten third downs. And it's been the one game where we put up more than 27 points, which is Cincinnati, Buffalo, we put up 27 and 34 against Cincinnati last week. It's because defense scored.
Yeah, I guess that's good. I guess that's a good point. I hadn't really put all that together in terms of the defense. It's just, you know, a lot of where my I only look at the stats after the fact. A lot of where my opinion comes is just from my gut feel when I'm watching the game. And it feels to me that I actually, you know, Shurmur aside, I actually like this team. I like where they're going. I feel like they have a chance to eventually be good. I haven't had that feeling outside of a few individual players in a very long time.
Yeah, and I think that's fair. I think from the lows of lows we were at 0-5 to the highs of highs we were at 1-5 to now kind of situating ourselves, okay, we're making improvements. We're maybe going to get 3-6 wins this season. We're not going to win out, as some fans were saying after Cincinnati. We're not going to go winless, obviously. We're not going to win one or two games. We'll win 3-6 in my mind. And I think that shows progress. That shows the individual talent shining out a little bit. And it shows we're kind of drafting-wise, personnel-wise, headed in the right direction, I think. And there's the optimism.
But don't you have any pride? Shouldn't you expect better? That's normally what I hear. And it's tough to reconcile, you know. At some point, if you accept it, you're probably a part of the problem. So are thoughts like yours, the ones that you just expressed, is that just part of the problem?
I think we're used to it. I don't know if it's part of the problem. I think as Haslam showed during the game, fans are he is his first one as the owner, but we've kind of gotten used to it. And if you really look at this game against Indianapolis, there's no way it ranks in the top 10 of worst losses since we came back. It's kind of normal for these days. You lose, it was close, we had a chance, we had a big drop. Oh, well, you move on to the next one, and hopefully we can be competitive again. And we've been competitive.
Yeah, it's funny. Haslam and his reactions on TV, it's actually going to bring back the violent reaction in me, I think, because I've been so bland on this team for the last couple of years. I've told other people that I started just looking at them like a scientist would. You're not really drawn in emotionally by them anymore. But to see Haslam get all ticked off like that, you know, it makes me want to bring back the F-bomb to my living room, you know?
It's nice to see. It's nice to see someone else caring besides us for too darn long.
Yeah. All right. So let's move along here. I'm already sick of talking about the Browns because, you know, talk about two inconsistent teams butting heads this weekend when San Diego comes to town. I just have absolutely no idea what to expect whatsoever. So we're just gonna skip it altogether. You're kind of a baseball guy. I don't know why. I know you're kind of a stats guy, but I always have you pegged as an Indians guy. Well, certainly an Arrows guy. So I need your take on, you know, what the Indians are doing and or what they're not doing. And so have at it.
No, all right. I think I just got a huge kick out of the quote from Francona that everyone's talking about, where he said, "We don't have a first baseman, left fielder, or DH, but that's going to change." That A, addresses the fact we are so awful right now, and we really don't have a substantial crop of guys in those positions coming up in the minor leagues. But B, okay, we understand it, we get it. What's going to change, says Francona.
So when he
means whatever it means.
Yeah, when he says it's going to change, does that mean Hafner's coming back?
It's possible. I saw some people saying he's got a $13 million option here, which won't happen, but how much money would we pay for a Travis Hafner to come back next season?
Hopefully zero.
Zero, you would think. Do we give him a bone for two or three? It's not five Grady Sizemore money, unless they didn't learn their lesson from that. But I don't know. Two, maybe. I don't know.
Enough with the predictions. Because you're talking like something they would do. I want to know what they should do.
What they should do? Yeah. Oy, it's not easy to say what they should do. This team is not very good at the major league level, and they're not very good at the minor league level. There is not a lot of talent coming through the system in 2013, early 2014 after that. The majority of the prospects in this organization are 2015 and later. You're looking at Francisco Lindor, who played for the Lake County Captains this past season. He is not 2 years away. He is 3 years away. If you look at what they should do, I don't want to say they should go and sign $20 million guys. That's not the way you build winning baseball teams. It's draft better. It's maybe make a couple of clutch trades. Get rid of a guy like Chu or Cabrera that has a lot of value, or especially Chris Perez has a lot of value on the open market, and continue to stockpile guys that could be productive in 2014 and later. I know it's hard to say. It's hard to come to agreement with. And it's awful to think about because this was supposed to be our contending window, but it's gone.
Well, and it's funny that you say that because I think half the fan base expects Chu and Perez to be gone. But you and before you, John mentioned trading Asdrubal Cabrera. And, you know, it doesn't sound totally out of the realm of possibility to me either. But do you think the Dolans could survive that?
Whether they survive or not, I'm perfectly fine if they don't. We've seen what can happen with a revitalized and passionate owner that actually goes to games. So if they don't survive, I don't really care. I don't think the fans would care either. But I think that's just okay. If you really want to do it the right way, you got to continue to get talent and triple-A'ers that have promise. I think the Indians had the right intentions in mind when they built this current organization, the current depth chart you see with the Major League team. They made the right calls in a lot of ways. They just picked the wrong guys. If you look at the Jimenez trade, if you look at the Masterson trade and all the other trades before that, especially CC Sabathia and Cliff Lee, I think those in a lot of ways were the right calls. They were the wrong guys. We got the wrong prospects, and they got the right talent in the end. I think we continued to make moves I thought were necessary. We just haven't executed on them, really.
So you don't have you written off Justin Masterson completely?
I think he's a mediocre talent. This whole team's mediocre. Masterson's upside is maybe a number two.
Well, but go back in time. I mean, did you think they were going to be this bad coming into this year?
No. I thought they were a 75 to 80 win team. I didn't think they were a playoff team. I was one of the pessimistic ones.
So you don't think this year could be something of an outlier for at least a few of these prospects, a few of these guys?
A few. I'll give them that, but I don't think we have very many, I guess, all-stars, a figurative word in Major League Baseball anyway, with every team having one. We don't have many all-stars that would be on a playoff team.
No, I mean, I guess I agree. At the same time, I don't know. You know, I expect Asdrubal Cabrera to be better. I expect, you know, Kipnis and Chisenhall can play. I think Brantley can still get better. I think Masterson, while I tend to agree that, you know, his top end is probably a two, he didn't play like a two even this year. So if they get everybody kind of back to average or back to their own personal average, or maybe even a little bit above, you know, they're probably only two or three legitimate players away. I mean, a lot of things have to fall into place, of course.
A lot of things have to fall in place. And this is a mediocre team.
But everything we heard was that there was more going on in that clubhouse this year than what we heard publicly.
And I think that's fair. I heard grumblings as obviously that losing streak kept going on and on, that there was lots of things wrong with that clubhouse. And Francona doesn't have the greatest history with losing streaks and teams collapsing. But, yeah, if we added a first baseman or a left fielder or a DH or another pitcher, yeah, this team could be a little more competitive, maybe finish five games behind the Tigers and compete for a wild card. But is that the right decision for the future of this franchise? Is that the right step? I don't think so.
Yeah, you might be right. And I don't think you could put it all on Manny Acta either. I'm not one of those guys. Because that team took a turn once they realized that no trade was happening. And, you know, they'd been in first place early in the season. And it's almost like, you know, with a couple injuries, they were just begging for an acquisition. And when that never happened, it seemed like the players took it down a gear.
I love me some Manny Acta, don't get me wrong. John Steiner, I know for the site, and his wife love themselves some Shelly Duncan. But I love Manny Acta. He's a stats guy through and through. It seemed to be a great hire, and I thought he was a great fit for this franchise even through mid-June as we were continuing to hover around 500. But that was as catastrophic of a collapse as I've seen. If it weren't for the playoffs being in jeopardy for Atlanta and Boston last year, it was worse. We just collapsed and became one of the worst teams in baseball over that kind of a stretch in a long time.
Manny Acta was such a good hire that the only two teams who were bidding for his services after he got fired in Washington were Houston and Cleveland. How did Houston do this year?
They are pretty bad, too. They had Brad Mills as a manager, though, once, and now we've got him as one of our coaches. So,
was he the manager or just, like, the interim manager?
I think he was the interim. I think you're right. Okay. But if you recall, who is Brad Mills' son?
Bo Mills? I don't know.
Bingo! Bo Mills! Ghost from Cleveland Indians drafts past.
Remind everybody just how far that apparition goes back.
Oh, Bo Mills, I think he was drafted a couple picks before Jason Hayward in the Major League draft and was eventually traded or released. I think traded to the Reds for a player to be named later in June this year, a former first-round pick, I think, in 06 or 07. So, the Indians and their drafting.
So you're saying he's not the answer for first base that Terry Francona was talking about?
Unfortunately not. He might be the answer at first base for the Reds, you know. We've had a good history of trading some beleaguered prospects to them and them eventually having some success, if you recall a certain Brandon Phillips.
Yeah, I do recall. All right. Well, I think that about wraps it up for tonight. This was kind of a depressing one. what else is coming up for you? When's your next weekend on the site and what's your Twitter handle so people could check you out?
Well, I was just on the site this past weekend. I think I'll be up the weekend before Thanksgiving again. My Twitter handle is @UDJRosen. I'm a Dayton Flyer alum. So follow me over on Twitter, and thanks to everyone for listening in this week.
All right, and that's been the WaitingForNextYear.com podcast. Check in next time. Waiting for Next Year.